How much coffee have you had?
To answer your question, I've had a lot of fucking coffee today.
I noticed.
I don't get up as early as you. I do get up about 5:45 and start drinking like 3 cups of coffee before I go for my hour walk. And then I come back and I drink 3 more cups.
Oh, God. No wonder.
So here we go. Woo! Hey, Warders, welcome to another episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About.
The podcast that makes business sexy again. And is fueled, today's episode is fueled by many cups of coffee, apparently.
Oh my gosh. Hey, I'm Gina Tremarco, improviser, sales trainer, speaker, all the things, now with Sales Gravy. And Rachel, what are all the things you are?
Mommy, a loan officer with US Mortgage and creator of the Ultra Fit Lifestyle.
Awesome. Super excited that our guest today is Dr. Cindy McGovern, the First Lady of Sales. We're going to talk about what in the world that means. I kind of have a feeling she wants to go by not Cynthia. We're not going to call her doctor. We'll probably call her Cindy. She is a top-rated speaker, consultant, and best-selling author of Every Job is a Sales Job, How to Use the Art of Selling to Win at Work. Dr. Cindy, it sounds like... Every time I say Dr. Cindy, I'm thinking like, don't hate me for this, like the sex therapist talk show. I'm sorry. Is that wrong?
This woman's had too much coffee. Just push mute for a minute, Gina.
God. Dr. Cindy is on a mission to empower people and companies to get what they want through sales. After years of consulting companies and helping them grow their business, she had an epiphany. Every job really is a sales job, and every person is a salesperson. Amen to that, Cindy.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be with you ladies today, and I too have had many cups of coffee, so you're welcome.
Okay, good. Can you pick up the slack? Okay,
I got you.
I'm currently drinking some pre-workout because I sort of felt this coming on.
What did you feel coming on?
I just felt like I needed a little energy boost.
Okay, I'll try to calm it down.
You know, Cindy, I just love that the last thing that Gina said, and part of your philosophy that every job really is a sales job and everybody is a salesperson. And my first career was in show business, and I used to, when I got into sales and still hung around a lot of performers, I would always say that even though you're a performer, an artist, dancer, singer, musician, you're still a salesperson because you have to sell yourself and your skills. And it was interesting for those kind of folks to process that because they're like, oh God, I hate sales. I'm not a salesperson. I said, well, you better get good at it because everybody's in sales.
I couldn't agree more. And it's funny because that was sort of my epiphany, was when I realized I had been selling my whole life. I just didn't call it sales because I was I wasn't a professional dancer, but I was a dancer. I was doing all these other things. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait a second. I've actually been doing this for like literally my life. And I mean, we were all 5 at one point in our lives, and 5-year-olds are like the best salespeople on the planet. So we all know how to do it. It's just doing it on purpose.
Hitting some serious hot buttons here. I didn't realize that you have a past life as a dancer, and because Rachel does, so there's a connection there. And I'm huge into Sell Like a Child. That's a course I created because kids are the best salespeople. Before we dive into some important questions, now I'm fascinated about this dance background, and we need to know a little more about what brought you to the sales arena, because Rachel and I are both performers. I've always been that person who said, I'm not a salesperson. And now I teach sales training. And because we're on stage as salespeople, everybody's on stage, and if salespeople would realize that it's a stage, they would like start quadrupling their money. So I want to know a little more about this backstory of dancing.
Yeah. So I wanted to, it all started. I wanted to be a solid gold dancer. You guys remember that?
Yes.
So that's where it began. Clearly that wasn't going to happen. And then I was like, well, then I'll be a Rockette. Well, I'm 5 foot nothing. So
same over here. I wanted to be a Rockette so bad.
Yeah. Too short. So I'm 5'3" on a good day. So that wasn't going to happen. And so I danced my whole life and then danced in college and then ended up teaching aerobics. And it was like all these pieces were always physical. Like it was always something. My art was always physical. And then I took a total left-hand turn, went to grad school to become a college professor. Teachers are the best salespeople on the planet too, for a number of reasons. I mean, I was teaching public speaking to college freshmen at 8 a.m. on a Monday. That's a tough crowd.
Yeah. Sell that shit.
Right. So I was pulling in literally like all of the background, like the dancing, the aerobics, like the funny jokes, like anything I could pull to try to get these students engaged. And then, you know, blossomed into another left-hand turn into a sales career. But it's funny because I totally believe that everything on that path brought me here. Had I not done some of those things, I wouldn't be here today. And just like you guys as performers, you know, you're performing every single day. And I think there's a misconception that you have to be this great performer to be a great salesperson. And you don't. You're literally selling yourself to your families every day, to your friends. Like, you're doing it already. Let's just do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think people dread the thought, this word sales? Like what do you think makes it so icky for people?
So it's funny. I have a chapter in my book called The Ick Factor. So I love that word because I completely was that person, just like Gina. I thought sales, I call him in my head, his name is Tommy Two Thumbs, and he's the used car sales guy that's coming across.
Oh my God, I dated him. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
It's amazing.
As soon as you did the thumbs, I just went, ick.
Yep.
Because that's two thumbs.
That's what people think, though. And honestly, yeah, that was my definition of sales, too, was that it was that guy. And I'm like, I'm never going to be that guy. That is not who I'm, nor do I want to be. So there was this feeling of like, oh, God, like I can't possibly ever be in sales because you have to be that. And I'm like, I'm not going to be that. So I think that's also why people have this feeling of ick, is they think you got to be like that guy.
And a lot of people think sales, and they think of, like you said, Tommy Two Thumbs, that is somebody trying to coerce you into doing something you don't really want to do or you're not ready to do. And it's the same as like selling as a parent. Like selling to my kid that maybe she should eat something healthy, but you can't force it because no one really wants to be forced to do what they don't want to do. So the magic of sales is to basically convince the person that it's their idea to take the action.
For sure. So I talk about this all the time in seminars and coaching, and I talk about it in the book. Nobody likes to be sold. However, we all like to buy. So it's not selling them, it's inviting them to buy from you. And I know you guys have a very similar philosophy, clearly.
Ooh, inviting them.
Whatever Facebook does to pop up all the ads of the things that I want, that's they're winning. like, yes, I do need another workout outfit. Thanks for showing it to me.
Bye.
Thank you for making it so easy to buy.
Click and PayPal.
Which is really, you know, like technology-wise, you know, they have the algorithms to do that. And something that we often talk about is that robots can do our jobs as salespeople in many ways, especially with sales sequencing, because there's so much that is asynchronous that you know, you don't need a human. But having a human and having a synchronous kind of conversation is what's going to be your tipping point. And while they got those algorithms on Facebook like to predict what we want, we still, you know, have to create these engagements and relationships that for different types of products. It's super easy to sell me another ring light on Facebook, but a car, you might, Tommy Two Thumbs. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot more decisions to be made, and you know, the emotional side of it, and all of the things. So, Cindy, they call you the first lady in sales. What's that all about?
Do you have is there a president and you're the first lady?
So it kind of started as a dig, believe it or not. And you ladies will attest to this, I'm sure. It wasn't that I was the first lady. It was often that I was the only lady.
Mm. Ah.
And so it was me with, you know, a bunch of gentlemen. And it was, you know, if it was a sales seminar, I was the only female speaker. If it was a meeting about sales, I was the only female at the board table. And so it started because somebody said, well, that little lady over there. And I went, excuse me. And somebody else, and I swear, I wish I remember who said this because I like owe them everything. They said, she's not the little lady. She's like the first lady. And I went, ding, ding, ding. And so trademarked it.
Nice. I like it.
Own that power.
That's amazing.
Amazing is one word.
Yeah.
My claws would have come out and punched someone.
Yeah.
Guys, guys don't know what to say sometimes.
Yeah, they're just no offense, guys. How did you get into sales? I'm curious how you went from dance to sales.
So I was a college professor for 4 years teaching communication, and that was what I thought I was going to do. I went to school for my PhD for that, and I started consulting in the summertime, and then realized I liked the adult population more than the 18 to 22 year old crowd. So started seeking opportunities to do more consulting, flipped full-time into consulting, and 6 months into my first full-time consulting gig, got put in a sales role, kicking and screaming. And I was like in my 20s, and I looked at my boss and I said, I'm not a salesperson. I'm never going to be able to do this. You might as well like fire me now. And he said probably one of the most profound statements of my entire life. He goes, if you learn to sell, it will change your life. And I gave the biggest eye roll on the planet, like, oh my gosh. And thinking, you know, I'm never going to be Tommy Two Thumbs. And fast forward all these years later, here I am spouting that every job is a sales job. So he was right. It changed my life.
That is so. What was the first thing that you were selling?
I was selling consulting services and training. Okay. And
that's hard.
It's really hard.
That is really
how would
hard.
You know, Gina?
That's some hard shit.
Yeah. And I think it sounds like the hardest thing about selling that type of thing is really creating the value around what you're selling. Because if somebody's like shopping for a car, Tommy Two Thumbs has kind of an easy job, because like every time I've shopped for a car, I know a car I want when I show up, pretty much. And like with consulting and that type of training stuff, you have to show the person, hey, this is the value you'll get, and this is why you need it.
I mean, it was such a nice to have, not a need to have. It was the best trial by fire there ever could be. Because I figured if I could figure that out, then I could sell, you know, other things too. But it really was, thrown into the deep end of the pool. Let's do this thing.
Now, you have a doctorate in organizational communication, which I'm very jelly of. Because I want to go back for a master's in organizational psychology.
In all your free time.
In all my free time, because I have a lot of it. What made you go for a doctor? I mean, this is a lot of work. I mean, you had to do the master's before the doctor. I mean, this is a lot of work.
It was. I was super interested in what I was learning, and I really wanted to go further and actually do research. I'm super nerd, so I love research. I love data. And that was what I got to do. So the org comm degree at the time that I did it was a third psychology, a third communication, and a third business. So it was literally all of my passion areas all at once. And I was studying ethics in the workplace and how nonverbal communication creates rule systems. I mean, I'm telling y'all, I'm like super nerd over here. And I totally dug it. And I was like, okay, I got to do this. So that's how I ended up doing it.
So would you recommend others to go and do it after you've been through it?
You know, it's it's hard. It's hard. Like, it's literally one of the hardest things I've ever done besides publishing a book. So when I wrote the book, I think that was harder than the dissertation, but the dissertation was the first foray into that, and having people basically, you know, you're writing your dissertation and everybody's telling you how bad you suck and you can't write. And then there's more red on the paper than black ink. And you feel like, oh my God, I should quit every day. So I think that in a weird way was a preparation for sales, because it was like literally rejection on a weekly basis from my committee on how poor my writing was. So wow. If you are down for getting a lot of rejection on your writing and your thinking, then absolutely go for it. But if you're not, it's probably not for you.
Wow.
So I just want to interject something, Rachel. Did you hear what she said about how hard it is to write a book?
Well, I already wrote a book, so step up, honey. We're all waiting.
We have this little rivalry about my book.
I'm Gina's greatest fan about her book that she hasn't finished yet.
I have a feeling that my new boss will put a fire under my ass.
Yeah, he wrote a book. He writes books like, you know, over the weekend, this guy.
Yeah.
But he's fast paced and like, get this done. And I'm like, yeah.
When you're ready, your book will show up.
It's right. It's.
I just think you're not, it's not ready.
The writing has started. I mean, the outline's done. The writing has started. It's in process.
It's going to be a great
book. It's in process.
So let's shift gears for a second. There's a really great, before we get into your book, Cindy, because I want to get into that. But before we get into that, there's a great article about you where you talk about something that I think I'm guilty of. In fact, I know it. And you call it kneecapping your career. Can you tell us what that is and why should we not be doing this shit?
Yeah. So it's something that I see a lot in women that I coach. And, you know, as a coaching and consulting firm, we're coaching everybody, men, women. And this is something that I see so very often that I needed to write an article about it. And it's really where you're qualifying whatever it is you're asking for rather than just asking. And I think a lot of times as women, we forget, especially in a work world, like this is that person's job. We're not asking them a favor to do this. It's literally saying, hey, is this going on? Do you have this done? Is this deadline ready? But we kneecap it by saying things like, hey, I just want to check in on that, Rachel, or hey, I wanted to know if you had a chance to look at this yet, versus really just saying what we mean, which is, hey, Rachel, where are we with this? Period. And we get in our own heads about it. And I think a lot of it stems from the fact that we don't give ourselves permission to just own the power we have. It's your position to check on that project. So check on the project. You don't owe an apology before you ask. Just ask.
Yeah. And I know that I do it because.
Yeah. Because why?
I think I'm trying to be nice. And I'm getting better at that, especially I work in mortgage during the day. And, you know, the more concise, the better for all the emails going back and forth. And so that might be a good approach for some of our listeners, is just stop with all the fluffy words and just be concise with what you need and what you're asking, right? Would you agree?
But I think there's a confusion where, you know, it sounds like you're even doing this, and I'm guilty of it as well, by the way, where we're confusing kindness with directness. And you can still be kind. I can still say, hey, Gina, good morning. How are we doing with this? Are we on track to finish on the deadline? Versus, hey, Gina, how are you doing? I just want to check in if you've had a chance. Don't qualify your ask. It's just like in sales. Don't qualify your ask. And that's essentially what kneecapping is you're qualifying your ask. You absolutely, it's a question, deserves an answer, roll with it.
You're minimizing your stature.
How many times has anyone out there wrote an email with the subject line, just checking in, ...
Sales 101, don't do.
I have done it. I have done it for sure.
Just checking in is so passive and soft and not confident. And why should I buy from you when you're kind of that soft?
Ooh. So what would be a suggestion to revamp said subject line, Gina?
Well, for one, get rid of the just.
Or specify checking in with you, following up with you on blank.
Yeah, and I don't even like checking in so much because that that can also be not direct enough, because checking in is like, checking in is still like, okay, checking in. Oh, checking in for what? Am I a hotel? Right? Like, you know, it's like, get to the point, whether you're confirming a sales call or you're confirming anything or you're following up, just be really super direct and to the point.
And I think it's also about discussing, like, one of the things I see where people, they say just checking in is where they've lost control of the sales process in their mind. And ooh, if you're doing sales and you're being direct, you shouldn't be losing control. So you should know what the next step is. So a lot of times in the coaching that I give people is, okay, where do you think you lost it then? If you feel like you have to qualify and get permission to check in with this person, you lost the sale. You're done already. So what could you have done differently? And then how can we go forward? And so a lot of times what I coach them is saying, discuss next steps.
Yeah.
And then let's do something to move it forward, because you're essentially giving them an out by just checking in, air quotes.
Yeah. It's one thing that we talk a lot about at Sales Gravy is the micro commitment and getting the next step in the process of like, okay, let's now review the proposal and let's now set a time. How's Tuesday at 3 or Friday at 4? And just cutting to the chase and getting to the point.
We teach the same thing, because if you leave it up to them, you've lengthened your sales cycle by God knows how long, and you've literally lost control. I mean, it's your job to orchestrate the sales process. So you got to keep them moving.
Yeah. And I think with, again, with women, we often have this, like, if we think that we're going to get further faster by doing what we think is nicer, because we don't want to come off as aggressive or bitchy.
Yeah. Yeah. So can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah. Yes,
please.
We told you this is how we roll.
Because you know, what's the funny is it's triggering me, because I am pretty aggressive, and people would say I'm harsh and aggressive.
Stop.
But yet I am super guilty about doing what you're talking about here, the kneecapping of like, hey, just wanted to see where this is at. And, you know, I'm better at it, but I do it. So like, what is that dichotomy in me?
May I jump in on that, Rachel?
Sure. I was hoping the doctor would diagnose me, but fine.
Well, I want her point of view on it. But as you were saying it, I was thinking about it, because I know you long enough to know your patterns. And it's interesting to me, you're at your most to the point and aggressive, or as people might describe you as aggressive, right? You're to your point when you're like focused, busy, don't have time for bullshit, and you stay focused and you stay in your lane. And that's when you're like pretty firm and solid and direct. That's a pattern I notice with you. And so that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. So I don't know, maybe if you feel kind of off on, because I know that there are days when you are super jam-packed and that stresses you, and so you're more direct. So maybe you should be more stressed and more direct.
Maybe I should add a few more things to my
plate. I don't know, but what is...
I don't need to right now. I have 100 tabs open on my computer right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. But what does Dr. Cindy have to say?
So I think part of it is, I mean, granted, I don't know you, but what I see a lot with our clients is it's usually at the edge of your growth, and with you're at the edge of your comfort zone, where you feel like you're sort of hedging your bets a little bit, or you start doing that. So even though you may be super direct in this space, it's at that moment where you're like, do I deserve to be here? Did I actually get a seat at this table? Wait a second, should I? And you start to second guess yourself. So one of the things I talk about even in my article is like being confident in who you are, like know that you deserve this. Like this is for you. You take it and you run with it and know your worth. And I think that's part of it. But the other thing is, I also think we sort of have, I call them the backup singers in our heads. We were conditioned by these folks. And I believe that we as women need to give ourselves permission to step into the spotlight in our own lives. So you all are performers. So we'll use a performing analogy. We are walking towards the spotlight. Those backup singers are not going away, and we need them. They were there. You know, my grandma's voice is in my head, look both ways before you cross the street. There are other voices that are there. The whole goal is getting them singing in harmony so that we can give ourselves permission to move forward. And I think when you're feeling that, and when you're feeling that little wobbliness, it's one of those backup singers is singing a little off key.
Nailed it. Because when I, if I'm in a place of where I'm very, very comfortable in the fitness space and the dance space, I know all of my shit up backwards and forwards. It's in the mortgage world where I'm relatively new that I'm a little bit kneecapping myself. So interesting. Totally.
Rachel, that reminds me of the committee.
When she was saying the committee is,
yep.
I call those backup singers the committee.
Yeah. Some of them don't get a vote.
They show up because they're on the board.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of them don't get to sing and they show up anyways because they'd like to.
Hey guys, just a real quick reminder, if you'd like to find social media links to me, Rachel, Gina, and our favorite Warner Keith, go visit womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, where you can also find some cool free downloads. Now back to the show.
Well, let's talk a little more about your book, Every Job is a Sales Job, How to Use the Art of Selling to Win at Work. What inspired you to write the book, especially as hard as it was?
I had to write this book, and it was something that was sort of in my soul. And you probably are going through this, Gina, like, you know, you have to write this book. It's just sitting down and doing it. But I kept talking myself out of it because I'm like, surely this book exists. Like, somebody's written this. Like, I didn't come up with this. Somebody's done this. So I just kept looking for that book and I never found it. Mm. And so I wrote the book that I wish somebody had given me when I was like 20. Mm. It's how to adult, but using sales skills to actually get what you want. And oh, by the way, those are skills you already have, but this is how you use them right.
I love it. How long did
Gina's book doesn't exist yet either.
It does not.
Ouch. No, there's no one. No one has a story like hers. It's great.
Well, I have many stories. I have many stories.
What? Tell us more about what we can learn in there. There's a 5-step formula that you talk about. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I needed to make sales approachable for non-salespeople because I literally wrote the book for non-salespeople for a large degree. And I wrote it for salespeople who tend to second guess themselves. So for all your listeners, like if you're fitting that category, it's in that vein for you. But I dedicated it to anybody who ever said, I'm not a salesperson. So I wanted to create steps that were easy for them to implement. And the steps are, you know, you have to have a good plan. You have to learn to look for opportunities. You have to establish trust with the other person so they don't think you're Tommy Two Thumbs. And then you actually have to ask for what you want. And then the way that you follow up with gratitude. And these are things that I think people do in the natural course of conversation when we want something to be done or we're trying to convince someone, but we tend to skip steps or we get them in the wrong order. Mm. And so I wanted it to be something people could literally just follow this in their mind and go, okay, did I actually do this? Did I do this? Did I do this? Boom, boom, boom. Check the boxes and then get you closer to getting what you want.
The ask. People get hung up on the ask.
If you don't ask, you don't get.
Amen.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just thinking about my daughter who will come up with stuff that she wants. And I can always tell when she's going to ask for something because she kind of works her way up to and then shyly asks for what it is she wants because she's, you know, trying to get something out of me.
This is a really great example for you to model for her because it sounds like how we behave as women. Kind of just gonna.
She's kneecapping her ass.
Slithering up and being sweet and nice.
Yeah, so I've worked here for 10 years and I've had the same salary. I was just kind of checking in on if
maybe
there's gonna be a raise this year.
Possibly.
And instead, how about we say, here's my contribution to the organization and I'm kind of a badass and I should get more money for that. What if we just did that?
Yeah.
Now, your daughter, Rachel, has also had some very savvy ways of approaching you to get things, too.
Yes. And I can't recall what you're referring to right now.
I think for when she was trying to sell you on artwork, on design, when she was designing logo stuff for you.
Yep. Yep.
How she would come in with her pricing scheme.
Well, she is inconsistent with it because last night she's trying to get some $40 out of me for something. And she said, I have an idea of something that I'm going to create for you. It's a surprise that will be worth $40. And I'm like, okay, let's see.
She's trying to sell you something you don't even need.
I don't know if I need it, but I'm really waiting to see what happens. So we'll see.
Oh my goodness. Kids. Let's talk a little bit about personal branding. You cover this in your book, and I love personal branding. Why do you think that personal branding is such an important part of building or maintaining a business right now?
So I think we're in such a state of flux as a world right now. We're, recording this podcast during the pandemic. And I think part of the challenge is people are trying to find their footing and figure out who they are and, more importantly, who they want to be. Like, we've gotten a pause. Like, there was a little pause button on the world in a way, and we've taken stock and taken inventory, and people are working from home and people's roles have shifted. And so I think it's a good time to look at that. But I think it's super important to have your personal brand, because most people have one already, they just may not even be aware of what it is. So recognize that your brand is already out there. Are you actually portraying what you want? And I think that's where the disconnect happens, especially for women in the workplace. And using that word, aggressive that we mentioned a minute ago, it's like, I'm not aggressive, I'm direct. Mm. And we have to change that brand. It's a misconception of how they're seeing us. So how do I start to feed this and get them to realize that it is directness and it's not aggressive means that I'm trying to be mean, but that's not necessarily the truth. And so I think it's the way that we look at ourselves and how we show up in the world, and very much giving ourselves permission to own that space. And I think so often we have this brand that we're like, we are the helpful friend, or you're the friend everybody calls for advice, or something like that. Do you want to be that? Is that who you really want to be in the world? And if it is, do it, and do it with intention. And if it's not, let's change that.
I'm pretty sure you're going to agree to this, agree with this philosophy, is that we often, as women, don't own our personal brand because we're trying to be everything to everybody. And we're so worried about being disliked that we just try to be these freaking chameleons that adapt to everything. And then nobody knows what we are because we're everything.
I think that's a huge issue for women in general. And I think men face this too, because a lot of our clients struggle with this as well, because they're trying to climb that ladder. Like, we're all trying to get better. We're trying to be seen as advancing. But one of the things that I think is super important is take stock in your own personal life. And are you the one that is volunteering for every committee? Are you the one that is baking for every bake sale? Are you the one that is doing this? Are you the one that's doing this? Okay, so why'd they keep coming to you? Because I'm going to tell you right now, your personal brand is you will literally do anything you're asked. Do you really want to do that? And if it's not, then it's starting to create those boundaries. But that's another permission piece, is I don't think we give ourselves permission to create boundaries that are really healthy for us. Salespeople do this too. It's like, oh, well, I'll do all of these things. Well, no, we're going to live in this lane.
So would it be fair to say that we should actually take a look at ourselves and look at, how do we want to be seen? How do we want to be considered? How do we want people, when they think of Gina, what do they think? What do I want them to be thinking when they think of Gina?
100%. And I think something that all of your listeners could do is whittle it down to 5 words. If you can whittle it down to 5 words, which is super hard, by the way, because it's I'm mom, I'm this, I'm that. Okay. 5 words. What are the core 5? It doesn't mean that you can't be a chameleon in instances, and you can be, the IT gal plus this, plus that. But at your core, what are the 5 words you want people to think about you when you're not there? And if they don't do that now, you're not selling your brand.
Mic drop.
I want to talk a little more about personal branding. I know that you're offering us this awesome thing for our listeners, that they can get a free bonus chapter all about personal branding from your book. And since you're going to do that, and you're, that's so awesome of you to give that away, could you give us one or two tips that we can take with us on how to enhance our personal brand? I also think that a lot of people don't like, and they go, what do you mean personal brand? What does that mean?
So 100%. And there's some of this in the bonus chapter. I'll give you a little bit more here today too, just because I want your listeners to be able to do this. So the first thing is taking inventory of who you really want to be. And that's one of the hardest parts of creating your brand, is because you have to be open and honest about it, because you're going to have to divorce yourself from some of the brand you have right now. And that's difficult. You know, it's like, I like being the person that puts on my superhero cape and goes and saves the day at the bake sale, but that's really not who I want to be going forward. You have to divorce yourself from that. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is feedback. And this is really hard too. We have to get feedback from our people around us on how our brand is showing up, and being open to feedback and being willing to accept it for what it is, which is honestly, it's a gift. It truly is a gift, because if you are creating your brand in a vacuum, what's the point? You know, you can be who you want to be in front of the mirror, but you need that feedback. So that's another piece that I think is really important and often skipped in the creation of that personal brand, is figuring out how the world sees you, getting the good, bad, and the ugly, and then tweaking the brand to go forward.
I think that's a big one. I think we don't want to hear the bad. But is the bad really bad? Do you know what I mean? Like, what might be bad to some people? Those people might not be our people.
Mm-hmm. 100% on that. And I think the other thing is, remember, whatever they're telling you is actually out there as part of your brand already. Mm-hmm. So if you think of it as your brand is a product, it's a thing that works. It's a car that runs. And it's missing a door, you would want to know that.
Right.
I don't think we give ourselves permission to hear it.
Yeah. I did this exercise actually recently as part of a marketing course that I'm a part of. And it seems like a scary thing to do, but it's actually really interesting, because I'm definitely harder on myself than the world around me. And what you find out is stuff that you already know, and you may just be kind of like thinking that no one notices, or denying it, or whatever. It's not nothing's going to show up that you haven't already created, that you already know about. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, okay, you're right. You know, that's what my experience was with it. And a lot of really good stuff that people said. So try it. Start with 5 people that you trust, and then go from there. 'Cause you don't necessarily, it's not always the best idea to ask Facebook, because you might get all kind of shit. But like, people that know you is a good place to start, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Your inner circle, because they know you the best. And this goes back to sales too, because it's funny where people will say, well, you know, I'm a real estate agent or something, and they don't sell anybody's house on their block. It's because your neighbors don't actually know that you're a realtor. So who do they know you as? Oh, wait a second. They know you as the neighbor that drives that car. They don't actually know what you do. Mm. So making sure you kind of own your block, and that those are the folks, because those are also your best minions and fans to help you promote your brand when you're ready to reveal it to the world. Those are the ones that are going to help you carry the flag. And so you need to make sure they know it more than anybody, quite frankly.
This is a really good point, because I was going to ask you for one more kind of tip on this. So it is about promoting it so that people know. You know, I've spent the past 12 years having owned an improv comedy theater in school. And so initially I became the improv lady, and that became, you know, like a little lady, I became the improv lady, and I had to work really hard to turn that, because I wanted to be taken seriously as a businesswoman, because I did other things before I started a theater that were business related, but because people got to know the brand of improv and the improv lady, I had to work really hard to break out of that brand and to get loud about it and to put stuff out there so that people would take me seriously. Some advice on how do we get that information out there once we've taken inventory and we've gotten feedback? How do we get the message out?
So the first thing is you need a plan for who you want to be and why you want to do this. There's got to be that why behind it, right? So why are we even doing this exercise? It's because you wanted to make a shift. You wanted to go from improv to other business and such. So there's some kind of motivator. So then you start thinking about who needs to know about that. So you look for those opportunities. You look for those people that you need to network with, that you need to connect with, who need to know who you are. And then you start figuring out mutually beneficial things so that you can help them, they can help you. It's sales, it's networking, it's all the things you guys already know. But then you actually have to ask for their help. And this is the hardest part, is asking for their help to promote. And then showing them how grateful you are that they're helping you. I mean, all of us here, somebody gave us a chance at some point when we started our own sort of paths in life. Somebody gave us that opportunity. I still keep in touch with those people that helped me, you know, when I started this company 11 years ago. So it's making sure we've got those pieces. And that's kind of the iteration of the five steps, but it's really about the way that you are taking that brand and bringing it to life. And I think the biggest misconception about that is that you can do it by yourself, and you absolutely can't. Nobody does it alone.
Awesome. Great mm-hmm. advice. One thing that we forgot to ask you in the very beginning, and then Rachel's got a couple fun questions to ask you. I'm going to kick off the first fun question, which is, are you a woman your mother warned you about?
100% yes.
And what makes you that woman?
Because I will tell you like it is. If your baby is ugly, I will tell you if you ask me.
Wait, do you have kids?
Nope.
All right. I would just advise the skip the baby part, but everything else is good. Just everything else is good to go, but being a mom, I would not tell people the baby is ugly.
Don't know, you're just
kidding. If you ask, there you go.
Yes, she did say, don't if you ask.
That is true, there you go.
Is my baby ugly? Yes.
Oh, God, US. There's some ugly babies out there too, right? So, Dr. Cindy, how would you define the word sexy?
So, I've been listening to your podcast, and a big piece of this is the way that people have been answering this question. I love it. I think the one of the sexiest things, and to bring sexy back into business, is about gratitude. I think we need a little more kindness in all of the chaos. And so I think that is sexy, that you're showing your gratitude to the people that came before you, the people that gave you a helping hand, the people that have supported you. To me, that is sexy.
Love it.
That is awesome. And, it's a great approach.
And I did catch at the top of this interview, your gratitude coffee cup.
Yes. So I do a huge campaign about gratitude around Thanksgiving every year. And so someone sent me this as a gift. And then someone sent me this little candy dish back here that says thankful. It was very sweet, little gifts coming in the mail. It is absolutely my thing. I think it's something we need more of in business and in life.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Great.
Amen. I've got a mindset coach that I've been working with in terms of some projects that I'm on. And that is the basis of everything that she teaches me, is just be grateful for those that are helping you get where you're going. So it's totally a great approach, because it makes you feel good as well.
Yep. Every Thanksgiving, we send Thanksgiving cards as a company instead of holiday cards. We send them at Thanksgiving. We're, you know, Orange Leaf Consulting, we like fall. So kind of like things around this time of year. But I send Thanksgiving cards to the people that have helped us. And I go through literally my entire CRM, and I pick out the people, and I sit down with a pen and cards, and I literally handwrite every single one of them to these folks. And I have done this for 11 years, and I will do this for, you know, hopefully 11 more plus, to let them know, because I think it's really important to take stock. And it's such a great exercise for me too, because it's humbling. It's so humbling to sit down and go, wow, I really didn't know my butt from a biscuit, and that person gave me a chance. Like, it's amazing, and it feels so good. And it's letting them know what they did to help on our journey. It's so powerful.
I think
powerful.
It's so cool to take inventory. I was thinking about a woman in my life that I'm not best friends with her, but I'm friends with her. And I often think about, she has done so many amazing things for me. when I look at things that have gotten me through some really hard times, that that person in particular reminded me how important it is to actually take inventory. You know, you don't have to be best friends with someone for them to make such a life-altering change in your life that really helped you. And remembering to, like, keep a running inventory of that and going back to that and looking at that. And I just posted something the other day about just the two words, love you, to someone. And it doesn't have to be romantic love, just, you know, and Rachel and I will say it to each other. That love you, sometimes, like, I just said it to someone the other day and they, like, lit up. And how that little thing, like even saying thank you, like people light up from thank you because they feel like they've been recognized. But that love you can really make people feel so amazing that you did that.
I think we also assume that people know the impact they've made on us. And they don't always, because, yes, I did somebody what I consider just a favor. It was somebody that I know and I care for and wanted some advice. And they sent me a very nice gift in the mail. And I'm like, that was not necessary. Like, but it made me feel so good. It was so generous, but it was not, you know, I didn't think about the impact that I had made until she did that gesture. And so I think it's something we can all do
It's going, like we were talking about Bob Berg, it's going back to being a go-giver too, right? Like you show 100%. Up as a go-giver without the desire to receive back. You just, you give and it comes back, but you have to be authentic in wanting to give to other mm-hmm. people. Rachel and I have seen this too. And even with the podcast, we'll get emails from women thanking us for the show. And those are such great moments because you truly don't know what kind of impact you're having on people.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, my favorite part of being a coach and being a trainer is the success stories, right? It's the person that I was in a training I did 5 years ago who sends me a message on LinkedIn and says, oh my God, it worked. You know, I did it again. Or I had somebody recently that moved to an outside sales role and she was on a webinar series I had done. And she told me, she was like, I did it. And I actually got an appointment. And it's like, that's the coolest thing ever, is getting that feedback. And I think people don't realize that's what keeps folks like us going, right? That's why we get up in the morning, is for their success, not ours.
I forgot. We still have a couple more questions, don't we?
No worries. So you mentioned getting that great advice when your boss years ago forced you into sales. But what would you say is the best advice you've ever received, man or woman giving it to you?
So the best advice I've ever received is be unapologetically you. Truly just be who you are. Show up in the world. Because I think I was raised in the South, raised as a very, you know, Southern woman, which I love. But there was sort of an apology system in my head around when I wanted to be more aggressive, when I wanted to break out of that mold. And so somebody said, and it was a gentleman that actually said it, said, why are you apologizing for who you are? You need to be unapologetically yourself. And I was like, wow. Yeah. And it was like a bombshell for me. I was like, that's so true.
Big part of our show.
Oh yeah. And any advice that you wish you had been given?
I wish somebody had told me early on that every job actually is in sales, because if I had known that, I could have gotten a lot more stuff that I wanted as a kid as well as an adult.
Right on. So let that be a lesson to you kids out there.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
So tell us where we can get your book, Dr. Cindy.
So my book is available, your local bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and we're offering on our website, drcindy.com, a free bonus chapter of personal branding if you grab it there. And they're actually going to include a couple extra goodies for your listeners. Just use the promo code WARNED when you check out, and they can get it there. And then I would love to hear the success stories. That is my absolute favorite part when people read the book. I want to hear how you applied it and what you did with it. Because I wrote it for you.
Awesome. That is so cool. We are going to include that in our show notes for you to get that bonus chapter and use the code WARNED. We love that. It has been so fun having you on the show. Doug is brilliant by bringing you on here, and he's been quietly hiding from us in the shadows. There's too much estrogen in the room for him, I think, today. But it's so delightful having you. I mean,
such a pleasure to be here. I feel like I could talk to you guys all day. It's like hanging out with two besties. So.
Well, we would love to have you back sometime if you want to come back, because we like to have cool women come back and be part of our posse.
Count me in.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. It's time for us to wrap up this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. Thank you, Warners, for listening to this episode. For more information about our show, you can go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, and you can find all the things there. Rachel and I just reminded ourselves we need to update our website because many things have changed in 2020 as we get ready to wrap up our second season and enter our third season. We are so like excited that we've got Doug on this team that keeps this show going, bringing us awesome guests. I'm Gina Tremarco. For more information about me, you can go to ginatremarco.com. And hey, if you've really enjoyed this show or any of our episodes, would you do us a favor and share the love? Share it out. Maybe someone needs to hear this episode, especially if they use the word just and they're just checking in. Get them to just stop saying just. Share this episode and give us a rating and review too. We love that. So thank you for that. And it is time for us to go. Thank you, Dr. Cindy and Doug. We're out of here. Bye, Rachel. Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey, monkey.